تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه الصلاة والسلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام صاحب السلطان كراكب الأسد يغبط بموقعه وهو أعلم بموضعه.
Imam Ali stated, "The holder of authority is like the rider on a lion. He is envied for his position, but he well knows his position."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. Dear brothers and sisters, we learn so much from the beautiful and all-encompassing universal persona of Imam Ali. Now, because Imam Ali, alayhi salam, was connected with the divine, he was connected with his loving Lord, his sustainer. Imam Ali was connected with the Almighty Allah. And thus the knowledge and wisdom which flowed through this divinely appointed Imam is truly everlasting. It is permanent, despite the passing of time and history. We find that the sayings and the words and the manners, the behaviors, the characteristics of this divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, are truly these gems of wisdom which are applicable in all of our lives in the present day. What is interesting is that in this holy month of Ramadan, we can benefit from these words and these statements from Imam Ali alayhi salam. For example, we find that His Eminence says, "If you show independence from others, you will be their equal. And if you give away something to a person, you will be their commander and ruler." We find, dear friends, in this beautiful statement from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find the importance of being independent from others. Now, of course, while we are independent from human beings, we should always remember, and likewise we should never forget, that we are dependent upon the Almighty Allah. And so our dependence upon the Almighty Allah will result in our independence from other human beings. And of course, if we become independent from other human beings, as Imam Ali says, we will become their equal. And this makes sense if you think about it, because if you are dependent on someone, you are automatically under them. But when you are independent from other people, then you become their equal. And finally, we find that Imam Ali, this universal persona for humanity and for the world, says, if you give away something, and he's talking about a gift or charity or alms or things like this, you become their commander and ruler. Of course, this is not to be taken in the negative sense. But if you give a gift to someone, if you give away something to someone, if you give charity to someone, there is, of course, a certain amount of love which is created in the heart of the receiver. It is that love and admiration and respect which is in the heart of the receiver, which in turn makes the giver their commander, their ruler, somebody that they look up to. A beautiful, profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother. My name is Muhammad. After returning from the Battle of Siffin, Imam Ali gave certain pieces of advice to one of his sons. Historians consider him to be Imam Hassan alayhi salam, while others are of the opinion that he was Muhammadul Hanafiya. He wrote this letter in the form of a will. They deal with almost every aspect of life, which goes a long way to make a man successful in life, brave, humane, generous, virtuous, and pious. Today, I'm going to read to you an excerpt from the last will of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. My dear son, So far as your behavior with other human beings is concerned, let yourself act as scales to judge its goodness or wickedness. Do unto others as you wish others to do unto you. Whatever you like for yourself, like for others. And whatever you dislike to happen to you, spare others from such happenings. Do not oppress and tyrannize anybody, because you surely do not like to be oppressed and tyrannized. Be kind and sympathetic to others, as you certainly desire others to treat you kindly and sympathetically. If you find objectionable and loathsome habits in others, abstain from developing those traits of character in yourself. If you're satisfied or feel happy in receiving a certain kind of behavior from others, you may behave with others in exactly the same way. Do not speak about them in the same way that you do not like others to speak about you. Do not speak on a subject about which you know little or nothing. And if you at all want to speak on anything or about anyone of whom you are fully aware, then avoid scandal, libel, and aspersion, as you do not like yourself to be scandalized and scorned in the same manner.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
When I said that وَمَنْ عِنْدَهُ إِلْمُ الْكِتَابِ does not mean that he only had the knowledge of the Quran. It's more than that. Then he goes on. And nobody ever made such a claim other than Ali after Rasulullah. In spite of all this attempt to bring up counter ahadith in the fadail of others, nobody would be able to, come to that level. He says, "Amma wallahi law thuniyat li wisadatan wa jalastu 'alayha." He says, "By Allah, if a cushion is placed somewhere for me to sit down on it, la aftaytu ahla at-tawrat bi tawratihim, and then I asked to make judgment among the dispute that the people of Torah have among themselves, I am going to give the fatwa and verdict according to the Torah in such a way, حَتَّى تَنْتِقُ التَّوْرَاتِ فَتَقُولُ صَدَقَ عَلِيٌّ. I will give the verdict to the Yahud, to the Jewish community, in such a way that the Torah itself will testify, صَدَقَ عَلِيٌّ, Ali is indeed true. Then he says, if the people of Injil, the Christians, come to me, I will give the verdict according to their Injil. حَتَّى يَنْتَقِدْ Injil يَقُولُ صَدَقَ عَلِيٌّ مَا كَذَبَ. Until the Injil itself will testify that Ali is true in the verdict that he is giving according to the book of the Christians. وَعَفْتَيْتُ أَهْلَ الْقُرْآنِ بِقُرْآنِهِمْ. And if the Muslims come to me for asking judgment on their disputes, I will give the verdict and the fatwa according to the Quran until the Quran will testify صَدَقَ عَلِيٌّ مَا كَذَبَ, that Ali is true and he is not lying here on what Allah has revealed in the book.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
With neon lights on the floor and walls, pulsing electronic beats, and a glowing red shuttlecock bouncing back and forth, Malaysian badminton court evokes a sci-fi movie set. Shuttle in the Dark is a badminton hall in the iconic Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was set up in late 2021 by a sport management company to encourage people to take up the racket sport after 2 years of social restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Director of INIC Sport Management says the initial goal was to draw sports fans and players back into action.
Our initial goal was how can we encourage and gain back the interest of people to come back and play. And not only those enthusiasts, but then as well the new people who was not able to or never play badminton before. So that's why we come out with this experience called Shuttle in the Dark.
Playing on a futuristic court presents an unusual challenge for athletes as they have to adjust their eyes to the darkness to fly. Badminton is one of the most popular sports in Malaysia and Asia, with a thriving community in the Southeast Asian community. It has produced some of the world's top-ranked players. A zoo in Ireland's capital, Dublin, has unveiled its newest habitat called the Himalayan Hills, a brand new home of the red panda and the snow leopard. Visitors are able to see the red panda's habitat by traveling along the new trail around a rocky edge to an open viewing area. The red pandas are typically climbing, exploring, or munching on bamboo at the top of broad-leafed evergreen trees. The expanded habitat was designed with a red panda's tree-dwelling lifestyle in mind. Also, visitors can gaze up at the 15-meter rocky slope through an impressive panoramic viewing area to spot the snow leopards. These elusive felines are typically nocturnal, so catching a glimpse of one is a rare treat.
Yeah, the animals are settling in well. We've tried to recreate the wild habitat in the Himalayan hills. Both species live quite high up. In case of the snow leopards, up to 5,000 meters on these very steep rocky slopes, which you can see here in the habitat as well. We've tried to use the topology of Dublin Zoo.
The project took a few years to complete. It was halted in 2020 due to the COVID-19 pandemic and massive budget shortages, but was restarted after government funding in 2021. The zoo is part of a protection project for red pandas and snow leopards. These animals are listed as vulnerable due to threats from poaching and severe habitat loss. Ancient Pompeii has a new guardian, Spot, a four-legged robot dog that will inspect the ancient Italian city's streets and tunnels to identify structural issues. The robot, designed by the U.S. firm Boston Dynamics, will patrol Pompeii at nighttime. The robot inspects the smallest of spaces and gathers data for planning interventions to fix safety and structural issues. Equipped with a 360-degree camera, Spot will also protect the city's streets from illegal relic hunters who cause structural damage to the ruins by digging tunnels. Pompeii will also have its own eye in the sky, a Leica BLK-2 Fly flying laser scanner capable of autonomously conducting 3D scans of the ruins, helping Spot carry out its tasks. Safeguarding ancient sites from treasure hunters has always been a problem for every country, especially the ancient ones.
A super rare birth has added a cute member to critically endangered Sumatran rhinos of Indonesia. The newborn calf is the sixth born since intensive efforts to breed the species began in the 1980s. The female calf, which doesn't have a name yet, was given birth to by a rhino named Rosa in a sanctuary. Rosa has suffered 8 miscarriages since 2005 when she was brought in from the wild for a breeding program. Fewer than 80 Sumatran rhinos remain in the world, mainly on the Indonesian islands of Sumatra and Borneo. Excessive poaching along with other threats has brought the species to the brink of extinction. The cherry blossom or sakura season in the Japanese capital is a magical experience as trees burst into bloom, dousing the streets with stunning shades of pink. This year, people are enjoying the occasion to the fullest as COVID restrictions are no more there. Thousands gathered in central Tokyo wearing masks, taking pictures and posing for selfies among the trees. Cherry flowers reach full bloom on Sunday, 4 days earlier than usual, according to the Japan Meteorological Agency. The age-old tradition of viewing cherry blossoms typically takes place across the country. The flowers are a national obsession. People flock to parks to hold parties and picnics. However, due to the pandemic, authorities have asked people to refrain from eating and drinking outdoors.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Millions of people across the world celebrate Earth Hour, a symbolic Lights Out event that aims to call attention to environmental issues and the necessity of protecting the planet. The annual event encourages people to turn off their non-essential lighting for an hour and take a break from using electronic devices during that period. Earth Hour takes place every year on the last Saturday of March. The theme of this year's event is Shape Our Future and has been celebrated in more than 180 countries, including Greece, France, Thailand, and Iran. The initiative was first introduced in 2007 by the World Wildlife Fund as a grassroots movement for highlighting the collective responsibility of the people towards their environment. An ancient place in Guatemala with special significance for the Mayan culture could be the next entry on the World Heritage List. The historic village known today as the Takalik Abach Archaeological Park was occupied for 1700 years before it was abandoned and discovered in 1888. It's said to have been home to a pre-Hispanic people. Archaeologists found their way to this mysterious piece of land where they found a series of exotic artifacts and sculptures back in 2008. Guatemala's Minister of Cultural Heritage says this site has a sacred place in the nation's culture.
Takalik Abach is a sacred place with important links to Guatemala's culture. It's a place that harbors flora and fauna biodiversity and even Mayan spirituality and wars wild. This makes this place highly important within the Mayan culture in Guatemala.
Archaeologists believe the monuments go back to the deep-rooted civilizations of Olmec and Maya in a Central American culture around 400 BC. The government has presented the site to UNESCO, hoping it will be declared a World Heritage Site. A Belgian-British teenager is on a solo flight around the globe that could make him a world record holder. Mark Rutherford started his journey from a small airfield near the Bulgarian capital Sofia on Wednesday. His first destination is the island of Sicily in Italy. From there, he'll fly south to Africa and then around the globe to cross the finish line again in Bulgaria. The 16-year-old pilot says he got his inspiration from his sister.
Egypt's rich history seems to be a gift that keeps on giving. The country has unveiled some exquisite, newly discovered tombs. The pharaonic tombs were found at the Saqqara archaeological site south of Cairo. The site is a big necropolis of Memphis, an ancient capital of Egypt. The graves belonged to a senior royal official, or rather senior royal officials. Some of the graves are engraved with interesting titles such as Steward of the Royal House and Supervisor of the Garden. The tombs are around 4,000 years old, dating back to the Old Kingdom of Egypt.
Iranian families celebrated the ancient tradition of Sizde Bedar, or Nature's Day, by spending some quality time outdoors with family. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
It's Nature's Day in Iran, and parks and countrysides are flooded with families who never miss the chance to spend the final day of Nowruz holidays out with their loved ones. The ancient occasion is called Sizde Bedar. Over the past 2 years, the festival was called off amid the coronavirus pandemic, and it's the first time in 2 years that Sizde Bedar is marked with such a huge crowd.
Because of the coronavirus, people could not go out on Sizde Bedar for 2 years in a row. And this year, the majority are vaccinated and green spaces are jam-packed with picnic goers.
We Iranians have grown up with Sizde Bedar and we never miss it. Thank God we can safely enjoy this amazing tradition this year with all our family members and relatives.
Sizde Bedar means getting rid of number 13. In Persian mythology, 13 is the bad luck number. Now Sizde Bedar is believed to chase away the bad luck and bring good vibes.
Today, we cooked special foods like arsh and chicken kebab to eat them for lunch with our family members. We traditionally believe that this day brings bad luck and we must spend it outdoors with joy to get rid of it.
The event is also called the Festival of Nature, and it is an occasion to raise awareness of the need to preserve the environment.
Throughout the history, Iranians have had close relationship with nature, and that's why we have dedicated a special day in our calendar to nature. Before we leave our place here, we clean the environment.
Sizde Bedar is the final day of the two-week celebrations of the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz, which marks the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. The tradition has been celebrated for some 3,000 years in Iran, Tajikistan, and Afghanistan, among other communities. Everyone must have missed outdoor gatherings after more than 2 years of COVID restrictions. Now that worries over the pandemic have eased to some extent, Sizde Bedar once again reunited Iranians with Mother Nature, with all the good vibes and hope for a world free of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Sheikh Baghir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile...
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi...
Shaheed Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr. He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarai that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners. You are listening to the program The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts, biographies, and the works of the most outstanding Muslim dignitaries all across the nation of Islam, the world of Islam. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Zianyam. Sheikh Zianyam, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi.
So today we want to talk about an outstanding figure, a Christian, Italian Christian by the name of Edoardo Agnelli, who converted into Shia Islam. And his family in Italy are really famous, the rich family. Although he was very much rich, you know, and wealthy, he left all these and came to Iran, converted to Shia Iran from Christianity. His death was really suspicious, and some believe that it was an assassination. He was killed and martyred. That's why for today's discussion, we want to talk about his character, Edoardo Agnelli. Let's start with you, Sheikh Zianyam. Give us some information about the early life of Edoardo.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Edoardo Agnelli was born in 9th of June in 1954, in the city of New York. He was from Italy, as his name is showing this. And his father was a senator of the Congress in Italy. His name was Senator Giovanni Agnelli. And this family is one of the biggest and wealthiest families in Italy and even all around the world.
That's right.
And the wealth of this family maybe cannot be calculated, but the company of Fiat and the Juventus football club
yes.
is also one of their properties, okay. beside the lands and castles that they have. So being the son of this family maybe is the wish of many of us, and having this wealth maybe is a dream of many people. But Edoardo was trying to find truth.
Yes.
And wealth did not, you know, blind him. And that's why we see that his life is changed after a while. Of course, during his, beginning years of his life, we see that he is living as normal people, you know, with Western culture. But he was eager to study. And he liked studying. And the library was one of the places that he was enjoying there. And he says that once I was, searching the books, or even we may say surfing the books in the library. And once he sees Quran on the shelves, he takes the Holy Quran and studies the Holy Quran. And that is a turning point in the life of Edoardo Agnelli, the right. son of the owner of Fiat Company and Juventus Football Club.
Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, give us some details and information about his embracing Islam. I mean, when did it start exactly, and what was the main cause for that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Actually, as he himself is narrating, that one day in New York, because he was studying in the Atlantic College, he is saying that one day while I was in New York, I was walking in the library, and I saw the Quran, as my brother mentioned. I saw the Quran, and it caught my glimpse. So I was really curious to know what is inside this book. So I took it, I started reading it in English, and I felt that those words were holy words and cannot be words of a man.
That's right.
So from that moment on, I was really touched, and I bought one Quran, a copy of Quran. And actually, he is saying that I borrowed the book and studied it further till I felt like I was understanding it and I was believing in it. That's so right. That was a turning point that made him to change his religion and embrace Islam, Sunni Islam. And as you mentioned at the beginning of this program, due to the relations that he had in Italy through the Iranian cultural deputy over there.
Mr. Qadiri Abiyane.
Yes, Mr. Qadiri Abiyane. One day he goes there with a second-hand motorcycle, which was not a very special transportation vehicle. So he goes there, he knocked the door. A servant or the officer goes and opens the door, say, okay, what do you want? He says, can I meet Mr. Qadiri Abiyane? He goes to Mr. Qadiri Abiyane and tells him that someone is calling you by the gate. He says, go and ask who you are. He asks, he said, I am Eduardo Agnelli, the son of Gianni Agnelli. When Mr. Qadiri Abiyane met him in that situation, coming with that motorcycle, he asked him, okay, if you're really the son of Gianni Agnelli, why are you coming this way? He said, since I have embraced Islam, I am really oppressed and suppressed by my family. So I was forced to come with this motorcycle, not to let everybody realize who I am. I only want to know about Shia Islam. And then that was actually the second turning point in his life through Mr. Qadiri Abiyane. He was regulating for him to come to Iran and have a meeting with Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayh. And this is also narrated that in front of Imam Khomeini, he said that I am embracing Shia Islam. And there are a very common photo from his participation in the Friday Salat behind Ayatollah Khamenei, who was the vice president of Iran
on
at that,
that
time.
That's right. That's all right. He got his PhD also in religious studies, isn't it? I mean, mystical and religious studies. Philosophy and mysticism, something like that.
Yes.
So he was quite familiar with the concept of religion. His conversion into Islam was research-based, I think.
He was interested in Oriental philosophy, yes, because of this. But I'm not sure about holding PhD degree. Since he was against materialism, the way that the lifestyle that their family has taken for their life, so he wouldn't get much supplement and help through their family.
Okay. He selected the name Mahdi for himself after converting to Shia Islam. Also, he got a chance of meeting the late Imam Khomeini in Jamaran Hosseiniya in Tehran. He also paid a visit or pilgrimage to Mashhad, Imam al-Rizal's holy shrine over there. After his conversion to Islam, Sheikh Ziyaniya, I think he was suppressed by the family, isn't it? By the wealthy and rich family in Italy. Is it true?
Yes, it's of course clear that when you try to not follow the beliefs of the family, then you will face with some, you know, distinctions, with some sanctions, and with, you know, deprives that they try to, you know, change your mindset. And these all took place regarding Eduardo, but the result was that he was more, you know, strong in his way and in, you know, his beliefs. That's why they didn't tolerate him anymore. And they tried to, you know, remove him from the family. And, you know, this is, I do believe, that have been censored in the media, especially in English language. We don't have, you know, too many sources regarding this, even if that there was a minute silence in respect of Eduardo Agnelli in 1999 at the beginning of the football game, soccer player game between the England and Italy teams. But there are not, you know, much information regarding Eduardo Agnelli in the net. And the reason is that they don't want people to get familiar with such personality and to know what happened to him.
That's right.
But here we want to discuss about it, that Eduardo, because he was not following the beliefs of his family, and even he was standing against them, and they didn't want him to have the wealth of the family to preach Islam.
That's right.
That's why they decided to kill him. By the way, his body was found under a bridge on the way of the highway between Torino and Savona, under the bridge named Franco Romano. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, in these cases, because the person is a famous one, mm-hmm. there were so many investigation regarding your body, but here the protocols were not observed.
Okay.
And he was
His body was buried without autopsy, yes. Without autopsy, and the files were closed and, classified. But according to so many of the journalists, like Giuseppe Popo, the famous Italian journalist and writer, he was assassinated. And according to his own prediction, maybe it was done by the Zionists, and it was a Zionist plot against Eduardo Agnelli in Italy to kill him. That's right. Okay, anything missed, Sheikh Mahtabi?
Only some complimentary point regarding what you mentioned, that there is a strong evidence that he was assassinated by Zionists. We have to consider that he was, actually, his mother was a Jew.
Oh.
Yes, his mother was a Jew, and he didn't have any other brother, and also the only sister was killed before him. Had passed away. So he was the only heir to this family.
And the only inheritor to this family. That's
yes,
right.
The only heir to this family. Okay. Even though the father has told him before any of these things take place that you are not going to inherit even one penny from my wealth, mm-hmm. but they wanted to make sure that he's not going to inherit anything. So, you know, after this, all wealth will go to the family of the mother. Why? Because after the death of the husband, the all property will go to the wife's
side. Which was a Jew
family. If there
is
no son, yes. Which was a Jew family.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, one book was written, and this is something that must be acknowledged and appreciated. One book was written in Italy in year 2009, and he is clarifying some certain points based on which you can come to this conclusion that it was not a kind of ordinary suicide, as they are claiming that he himself...
How a person can convert to the religion of Islam...
And then commit a suicide.
Commit suicide, you know?
Yeah. Impossible. And they are saying that if it was a suicide, why you didn't treat it the same as the... All ordinary. So there is no camera photo from his face, since they are saying that he fell from the breach. So there is no camera photo. Okay. There is no proper autopsy and report on the autopsy that took place. And he was buried so fast, and even they are believing that taking the funeral and burial ceremony in a short period of time without giving chance to anybody to investigate or examine the body, it shows that something was going wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. So these things are the evidences which are supporting this idea that it was not an ordinary suicide.
That's right. Thank you very much. May Allah bless the soul of Eduardo Agnelli, the convert into Shia Islam. You know, sometimes this type of conversion into Islam, if you are rich, you have to leave all this materialistic world, you know, this wealth of the family, and then come into the religion of Islam. And you know that you will miss everything. You will miss every type of, you know, luxurious life that you had before and already. Because of your conversion, because of your faith and belief, you are ready to do this sacrifice. I think this makes the work and the achievement of Eduardo Agnelli very much greater. May Allah bless the soul of Eduardo Agnelli, Shahid Mahdi, or Mahdi after conversion to Islam, he was called. May he rest in peace, inshallah. Thank you very much, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya for your presence in the program, The Teacher. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. We hope you enjoy. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/ and Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel, Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Alfi Amanallah.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith.
إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins.
What does Maha Ramadan mean to us?
This is Dialogue, a program on the holy month of Ramadan and the importance of fasting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program. This is Dialogue. We're talking about the blessed and holy month of Ramadan. The holy month of Ramadan, as you all know, is the blessed and honorable month when the doors of the Almighty Allah's mercy are open. It is the blessed month when forgiveness is easy to gain, but only if we take our steps in this direction. The holy month of Ramadan, the great month when the doors of hell are closed, a beautiful, a blessed, an honorable month, a month where we return towards the Almighty Allah. The holy month of Ramadan, a month where we gain our provisions for our journey towards the hereafter. The holy month of Ramadan, where we establish a connection with our loving, nurturing Lord, our Creator and Sustainer, Allah, exalted and glorified is He. The holy month of Ramadan, the greatest of months, the most honorable of months, this month in which we can return towards Allah, this month in which we can reconnect with Allah, this month in which we can gain the provisions for the hereafter, this, the holy month of Ramadan.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إنما سمي رمضان لأنه يرمض الذنوب.
Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam stated, "Verily, the month of Ramadan has been thus named because it scorches away sins."
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, the program's Dialogue, and we're talking about the holy month of Ramadan. So, dear friends, when we're talking about the holy month of Ramadan, this blessed and beautiful month, we find that this is the month which is hosted by Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted. Now, just as a precursor, the word Ramadan comes from the root word Ramadha, and this means to burn. But interestingly, it is a burning which is not accompanied by smoke nor ash. And one of the reasons for the naming of this month as the month of Ramadan is because the sins of human beings are burnt and destroyed. This month, dear brothers and sisters, dear believers, dear friends, is a beautiful month in which we must definitely try our best to take full advantage of this opportunity. There are so many countless opportunities in this holy month of Ramadan, but we find here again that one of the reasons that this holy month is named Ramadan is because the sins of people are burnt, they are destroyed, they are erased from our ledger. And so, why would we not want to take this opportunity where this month, which is hosted by Allah, and this month in which, by its name, it erases the sins of people, why would we not take advantage of this great opportunity? This opportunity, this almost excuse for the Almighty Allah, the Merciful, the Most Quick to forgive our sins. But of course, we must remember that the first step when it comes to our sins being erased is that we have to ask for forgiveness. We have to realize that we have committed errors. We must be shameful and regretful of these sins that we have committed. And of course, we must repent sincerely to the Most Forgiving, the Almighty Allah. And so, one of the things that we can do in this holy month of Ramadan, this month hosted by Allah, this month in which the sins of people are burnt, destroyed, and erased. This is Dialogue, the holy month of Ramadan.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
The fasting of the month of Ramadan is an important pillar of our faith. And all physically fit and mature Muslims are required to fast every day of this month of Ramadan. Fasting is not unique to Islam. It is there in Christianity, in Judaism, even in Hindu and Buddhist tradition. There is this tradition of fasting. However, in Islam, when we talk about fasting, it is more involved in a sense that every day of the month of Ramadan, we have to abstain from dawn to dusk, abstaining from food, even from drinking water. And those who are smokers are not allowed to smoke. You know, so you'll see at the time of iftar, many people go for food, others will go outside. You know, but it's not that we encourage smoking, but that is also one of the abstinence that they have to observe. And especially keeping in mind that, you know, we do this for 29 or 30 days of the month of Ramadan. And since the Islamic months, the Islamic calendar is 10 days shorter than the common calendar. And so it does not always occur on the same
you know, time frame as the common calendar. It is always 10 days ahead. And it takes about 30 years for the month of Ramadan to go through the cycle of the seasons. And so we get this question many times. Why do the Muslims fast? There are different ways of answering that. It is actually nothing to do with the issue of atonement for the sins. This is actually considered to be an act of worship in Islam, to fast during the month of Ramadan. And the reason are multiple, actually. It has to do with physical benefits, spiritual benefits, as well as social benefits. When it comes to the physical level, you know, one thing is sure. If you fast for 29 or 30 days of the month, at the end of the month, you are going to lose a few pounds, provided you are careful with your iftar and the pre-dawn meal. Because if you overeat at that time, then, you know, it doesn't really help in that way. But we know that fasting itself has physical benefits. There was a report published from the scientist of the University of South California where it was interesting to see that they are writing, fasting for 3 days can regenerate the entire immune system, even among the elderly. And so definitely when we do the fasting on a physical level also, there is benefit for us.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at farstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. محاريب اتصال برب العالمين وروضات سناها تقيم الوحي فينا محاريب اتصال برب العالمين.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As a reminder, we talked about Thanksgiving in the previous episode and said that if we want to thank God, we should worship Him sincerely with pure intention. By the way, what is worship? Perhaps prayer and fasting are the first things that the word worship brings to the mind. This is not wrong, but these outward things have inward realities, which are called zikr or God's remembrance. God says in the Quran, "Indeed, I am